Well, hi, neighbors. Tonight we've chosen some of the songs that we sing and play on our dances across the country. Songs that reflect the emotion of the people that live in the nightlife. Song of happiness, sadness, heartbreak. Songs of the nightlife. And we hope that you enjoy yourself tonight as you listen to our latest one. We hope you like it. It's a little different what we normally do, but we hope it'll be pleasing to you, and we hope that you can just kind of sit back, kick off your shoes, relax just a little bit, and listen to our latest song. And if you like it, tell us about it, won't you? We'll try to do more things for you the way we're doing this.
Thank you. rock body with your face on it, shrunk down to the size of a fist. Many a hero has been brought down like Samson by a perfidious bar.
Challenge number 13.
Said,
I just dream of a neon kiss from the barbarian Dan in the wonderland. Now I don't know what I just said, it came to me from the living dead. Somewhere there's a graveyard out beyond the perimeter. It must be where you sit there and you wonder why I'm speaking. You might not be listening, it might just be I'm freaking. Hey, I'm the future titan. I'm not gonna spoil it, but I'm not gonna crash this plane. I'm gonna slide across the Spanish Main. I'm gonna go down to Atlantis town and see who's hanging around. And the Neptune ladies from another time, just ignore the sea of slime. And they say, what's your sign? I'll say, I haven't got the time, cause I'm the future pilot, and I'm the future pilot. I've got a radar set instead of a heart. Come on, baby, I'm not that smart, but in the song I play the part of the future pilot. Don't walk. Don't talk. No. Do not investigate the astral plane, or else you ride in my silver plane. All aboard, we'll go for a ride, cause I'm the future. I'm the future pilot. I'm the future pilot. Don't you tell it or take it away. Just now wait for judgment day. Jesus and Satan will be riding along inside the words of this song. Little girls in the concrete world and major men who have the end to be one or the other. The ones they call they or them. Though you don't understand the reason that I bleed in this microphone, I'm just singing to those all alone out there in the lonely zone. Cause I'm the future pilot. I'm not gonna give you your wings here at the Air Force Naval Air Station for the dreamers in the soundscape called life. You're a future pilot. 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 Don't deny it or retail it. Future pilot, don't deny it or retail it. Hey, yeah, future pilot, future pilot.
Days there was a kind of fever that pushed me out of the front door into the pale exhaust fumed park by Broadwater Farm, or the grubby road that eventually leads to Enfield, Turkish supermarkets after chicken restaurant after spare parts shop. Everything in my life felt like it was coming to a mysterious close. I could hardly walk to the end of the street without feeling there was no way to go except back. The dates I'd had that summer had come to nothing. My job was a dead end and the rent check was killing me a little more each month. It seemed unlikely that anything could hold much longer. The only question left to ask was what would happen after everything familiar collapsed. But for now, the summer stretched between me and that moment. It was ferociously hot, and the air quality became so bad that by the evening the noise of nearby trains stuttered in fits and starts, distorted through the shifting air. As I lay in my room, I could hear my neighbours discussing the World Cup and opening beers in their gardens. On the other side, someone was singing an Arabic prayer through the thin wall. I had no money for the pub, so I decided to go for a walk. I found myself wandering aimlessly to the west, past the terrace of chip and kebab shops and laundrettes near the tube station. I crossed the street and headed into virgin territory. I'd never been this way before. Gravel-dashed houses alternated with square 60s offices, and the white pavements undulated with cracks and litter. I walked and walked because there was nothing else for me to do, and by degrees, the light began to fade. The mouth of an avenue led me to the verge of a long, greasy A-road that rose up in the far distance, with symmetrical terraces falling steeply down then up again from a distant railway station. There were four benches to my right, interspersed with those strange bushes that grow in the area, whose blossoms are so pale yellow they seem translucent, almost spectral. And suddenly tired, I sat down. I held my head in my hands, feeling like shit, but a sudden breeze escaped from the terraces, and for a moment I lost my thoughts in its unexpected coolness. I looked up, and I realized I was sitting in a photograph. I remembered clearly, this photograph was taken by my mother in 1982 outside our front garden in Hampshire. It was slightly underexposed. I was still sitting on the bench, but the colours and the planes of the road and horizon had become the photo. If I looked hard, I could see the lines of the window ledge in the original photograph were now composed by a tree branch and the silhouetted edge of a grass verge. The sheen of the flash on the window was replicated by bonfire smoke, drifting infinitesimally slowly from behind a fence. My sister's face had been dimly visible behind the window, and yes, there were pale stars far off to the west that traced out the lines of a toddler's eyes and mouth. When I look back at this, there's nothing to grasp, no starting point. I was inside an underexposed photo from 1982, but I was also sitting on a bench in Haringey. Strongest of all was the feeling of 1982-ness. Dizzy, illogical, as if none of the intervening disasters and wrong turns had happened yet. I felt guilty and inconsolably sad. I felt the instinctive tug back to school, the memory of shopping malls, cooking, driving in my mother's car. All gone, gone forever. I just sat there for a while. I was so tired that I didn't bother trying to work out what was going on. I was happy just to sit in the photo while it lasted, which wasn't for long anyway. The light faded, the wind caught the smoke, the stars dimmed under the glare of the street lamps. I got up and walked away from the squat little benches and an oncoming gang of kids. A bus was rumbling to my rescue down the hill with a great big Via Alexandra Palace on its front, and I realized I did want to drink after all.
It scared me for years. Right now, it's a feeble evening roar, not unsimilar to a beach evening ending. On the table to my left, there's a magazine with a picture of a dead monkey, making a mockery of what I'd call art. But what would I know about the scene in this city that has swallowed up friends, lovers, and family? Just give me a village the size of a teacup. But you're happier here, spread out with your eyes closed. I feel I should order a drink in celebration, to welcome the summer whose first day is ending. But should you wake, you'd catch me, of course, and ask me the wisdom of drinking once more. I cast my mind back to yesterday's wedding, where we got drunk and fell over. I did my best to be polite to a family I'd never met, but on numerous occasions, I guess I could have tried harder. Of course, by the end of the night, I was best friends with everyone and everyone's wife. But right now, I can remember their names, no matter how hard I tried. As the sun glares through the hotel window, I wonder of our future and where it'll lead to. I wonder if you'll be laying there 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the line. I'll still be staring out at the street, confused about love and life. It'll be interesting to see if anyone ever bought those songs of mine, if anyone heard those words that I never got quite right. I think I can be honest in presuming the world is not exactly going to be leaping out of his bed to make me rich, using my songs in adverts, selling oranges, or lemons. Who knows, I may end up owning the whole street, or more likely, sleeping under a tree in the park opposite. Would the runners keep me awake, or would I keep them asleep? I hope I'd have the sense to move back home, as lovely as today is. I imagine the winter would be rather cold. I've been told for years that the devil had the best tunes, and that the devil lived down here, whereas us country folk weren't worth the salt from the road. From expat magazine editors who chose to lose their temper on the easily persuaded northern town dwellers. And sure enough, 99% of the people I meet have scant regard for entertaining me. It seems I'm too old and too slow and too quiet and just wrong. Well, I'm glad. In their cocaine-fueled electronic cabarets, I'll be the man at the bar drinking overpriced whiskey from a barmaid who's too good to catch my eye. As she only works here 2 nights a week, the rest of the time she's a singer in a rock and roll band. I bet she'd change her tune if I told her my album had peaked at number 172. That I also have friends who work in bars, and that didn't define who they are, though it certainly helps their capacity to drink. But I've strayed off the subject, and now I'll be leaning over and waking you up, and you'll squint at me through the cracks between your eyelids, woozy with cider, as if you're asking just exactly where we are and exactly what I wanted. And I'll be happy, as we won't be taking anything too seriously.
Everyone said, that's when she said she'd never drink again. I would tell her when she stared at me with her eyes wide and watery that they reminded me of the well she fell into. She liked it. It made her laugh.
Beds are a mess, all more finished and at rest. I can just see the post-rock flush across your chest. The telly's silent, the room's lit only by the screen. And there were perfect moments, but just our pulses in between.
Well, I'm not listening to what my mother said. What we're doing inside my bed. And I'm not pretending this time you're someone else. But I'm cleaning these sheets all by myself.
Afterwards is best. You go to get dressed. I think your pants are by the door. I think tomorrow we may be sore. Even in this light, your tits look white against the tannin. And I know that we're a couple, 'cause we went down the family planning. It hit me in the waiting room when you were getting what you need. But I can't help be a bit disappointed when you stop.
Trail deep in the back of his mind. wept through the trees. All the stained glass windows rattled. I haunted a Bastille liquor shop in 1927. On the beach. In summer there were thunderstorms constantly. They were unpredictable. Nobody knew when they would come. Nobody knew how long they'd last. Sometimes they'd only last 5 minutes. Sometimes weeks. I haunted the basket maker shop because I had nowhere to go. One long weekend. Stained glass windows turning off and on. Tremor on the back, dark corners. Cobwebs stripped, mildewed. I remember acoustic guitars, bells.
Animals, I love them, but the thing is, you know, whenever you see animals on telly, it's always a show off animals. Yeah, it's always the leopards and panthers and crocodiles, lions milling about going,
oh, I'm very good, I'm on everything.
And it really makes me annoyed, you know. I mean, about the English animals, the British mammals, yeah. Ah, what about the muskrat or the tiny northern root vole with his little banjo and hat made of elastic bands? Yeah,
no one.
That's who. I was furious. So I went round all the heavily wooded regions in England, and I just went round the small pamphlet recruiting like a huge slave rebellion. I was like Spartacus. I was there going, okay, we're gonna go to Africa, we're gonna kick their asses. And I got a huge sort of tiny little mammal slave rebellion. They were all wearing tunics. We were there rummaging about Greece. Well, Kent. And I said, come on, we're gonna go over there and we're gonna show them. I'm sick of the lions, I'm sick of the crocodiles, you must be too. Come on now. Big rusty bomber, and we flew over to Africa. But we needed a strategy. Couldn't just go over there, you know, and go, come on, give them some aggro. We needed a strategy. So what we did is we built a huge wooden shrew, like the wooden horse of Troy, but just a little bit more stoaty, with tiny little stoat's arms holding a spear. And what we did is we lined it to make it double dangerous. We lined it all with Kit Kat wrappers. Ah, oh, it was fantastic. It was like a glossy bitch. Ah, oh, it was so bright. It was a metallic wonder. Small boys would rather eat a pair of scissors than go near the glossy bitch. Don't make me go near it. I'll eat another pair of scissors. I can't look at it. It's doing my pupils in. Ah, oh, it was fantastic. It was very warlike. The body was very warlike. But the eyes, they were telling a different story. Body warlike, eyes, like the eyes of an old Russian lady who'd seen too much. An old Russian lady with her arm caught in a loom, and big sailors would walk past and go, hello. And she'd go, no, not hello, my arm, it's in a loom. And they go, yes, hello. And she'd go, no, not hello, no, it's gone maroon. My arm, it is in a loom. And they go, yes, hello. And she go, no, not hello. And in the end, she'd have to pick up the 2-ton loom and walk and follow them home and knock on their front windows. And they'd be going, oh, you're scaring me a little bit now. That's what the eyes were like. Dangerous, but beautiful at the same time. Circles out of the base of the shrew so that Martin Pine Martin could stick his little Stoughton Weasley legs through and wheel us around. It's fantastic. Although we had no windows, so we were crashing into antique shops, knocking over stationary yachts. We were having a nightmare. And eventually we found the planes and we waited till dusk, waited till it got a little bit dark. And we looked for a crack in the shrew and they were all out there, lions moving around. We're gonna get you, you freak nuts. So what we did is we waited till it was dark and we went out and we went charge and we ran at them, and when we got out there we couldn't believe it. They were huge lions the size of transit vans. We didn't know what was happening. Leopards like marquees. Oh, he's like a Victorian tennis house. Look at the size of him. Martin the Pine Martin was in a riot state. Said, no, I'm not going out there again. They were bloody huge. Didn't tell me they're gonna be that huge. What's happening to your voice? And I don't know, but I'm a bit scared. So we all ran back in the shrew. We were like, oh no, what are we going to do? Let's come up with plan B. Luckily, Morris, the wood pigeon, went, I've got an idea. And he brought some Japanese tourist costumes along. So we popped them on, went out there and we took photos of them all. But we used them cameras at Firewater. Oh yeah, some of the zebras were soaked. Cheetahs bringing out their gussets. We went over there and we kicked their arses.
started, his breath was still. Slowly, he turned.
We're just receiving reports of an incident at a farm in Sussex where a number of people have been arrested in connection with annoying the nation. It is believed that the owner of the farm, a Mr. Hibbert, has been cooperating with police and government officials in a plot codenamed Operation Less Pricks and kindly granted permission for the use of his 17th century tithe barn as a temporary holding place for those arrested. Although not confirmed, we are led to understand that those already charged include bus drivers who don't wait for people to sit down before pulling away from the bus stop, taxi drivers who use their horns instead of knocking on the door, people who moan at the council about the streets being full of litter, not stopping to think that it is people who drop litter, not the council, a room full of drama teachers listening to Bjork, grown men with replica shirts worn over their jumpers who stand up and stretch out their arms when the opposing team fail to hit the target, an assortment of scriptwriters, novelists and playwrights who own Argus but don't know how to use them, a musical equipment reviewer responsible for an article titled Microphone of the Month, a woman who described herself as a little bit Bridget, a little bit Ally, a little bit Sex in the City, and chose to call her baby boy Fred as a childishly rebellious attempt at a clever reaction to those who might have expected her to call him Julian or Rupert. Bit of advice, call him Rupert. It fits, and besides, it's a good name. Don't be calling him Fred or Archie, with all its cheeky but lovable working-class scamp connotations, unless you really do have plans for him to spend his life in William Hills waiting for them to weigh in at Newton Abbott. Also being held is a whole wall full of teenagers spitting needlessly, an amateur thug in camouflage trousers whose Japanese fighting dog had run amok on a Swindon council estate, a man from the record company who said that George Michael continues to challenge social taboos through his music, Lisa Riley, continuity announcers introducing comedy shows, a pub band who gets uppity when everyone goes to the bar during a song they've written themselves, a group of football fans referred to as Commodores, as in once, twice, three times a season, who feed sugar lumps to police horses at cup finals, an artist who said his next album will be more song-based, a man who informs people that he gets up at 6 a.m. every morning and seems to want a medal, people who say they speak as they find and are somehow proud of it, journalists who try and spell an interviewee's laugh, an organisation who declared an awareness week for awareness weeks, and a council worker who dropped litter. We'll bring you more details as they emerge.